Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What's true? What's false? What's important? And what's the role of American journalism in today's democracy? We're broadcasting live today from the South Dakota Festival of Books. Thomas Patterson is the Bradley Professor of Government and the Press at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. His book, Informing the News, was chosen as 2018's One Book, South Dakota. It's an unflinching look at the state of American journalism with an eye toward changing the profession itself for the better. The book was selected as part of the South Dakota Humanities Council's Democracy and the Informed Citizen Initiative. And Thomas Patterson joins me on the stage here at the Performing Arts Center at South Dakota State University in Brookings. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Lori.
Now, this book was written before the candidacy of Donald Trump, and that has been really useful as we've had some of the discussions with this book before your arrival. Because you can kind of see what was happening in journalism, what was happening in the media, what was happening in public discourse even before the 2016 election. Have you found, take me back to when you first started kind of doing this research and really, you know, digging into this book, what was driving the conversation then?
So the genesis of this book is actually quite lengthy. We were working with the Carnegie Corporation and the Knight Foundation with top journalism programs around the country to change the journalism curriculum, moving it a little bit from craft training to kind of knowledge-based training, so that to kind of deepen the training so that when journalists think about their subject, they not only think about interviewing someone, going to the scene, if it's observable, but also what do you have to know to talk about that subject in some detail and with authority. And that third piece was not part of the curriculum of journalism schools. And so we worked on that with those schools for about 10 years, and they began to work it into their curriculum. And then the question is kind of how do you take what really was a retail attempt to change journalism? How do you go wholesale with it? And the idea was that I would do this book on this subject and basically kind of make the argument for why we need knowledge-based journalism, what that would look like, how different it would be, and the kind of contributions it could make to an informed public. And you mentioned Donald Trump's presidency. I think, you know, Trump has exaggerated virtually all of the tendencies that have existed in the media. You know, increasingly the media, pre-Trump even, were being driven by the digital age and the demands of the digital age, which is shorter, faster. And then Trump comes along and it becomes even shorter and even faster. And the tendency of journalists, many of them, to kind of cut in on the first level, the superficial level. It's amazing how a tweet can change a political agenda. He's a master at it. But many journalists don't think about it in that way. They see some story potential in the tweet. They get it up as fast as they can. If you're on cable television, you talk about a tweet for hour after hour after hour. And meanwhile, there are these other issues out there that impact not only on the U.S. but also our role in the world. I mean, if you asked Americans today, where is the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world? I think Americans would be hard-pressed to say where it is. And then you look at the news and you begin to understand why they might draw a blank on that. There's a huge humanitarian crisis in Yemen, but it's getting very little coverage at all. So we're getting some war coverage out of that theater, but much less talk about what's happening to the people there. You know, and that's very different if you go back to the early 90s, when even though cable was part of the system then, it was still operating kind of under the old rules, and we had this humanitarian mission in Somalia. Now it happened to go badly, but we were there in part because the news media were telling the American public about this particular situation, and so you could focus public attention and presumably get lawmakers interested enough to try to act on it. And you know, now the agenda almost changes day to day. And the news media are part of that problem. They kind of like to see themselves as a little victimized by that. But in many ways, you know, they're kind of making it happen. They're a facilitator.
You mentioned the early 90s, and then you think back to the Gulf War, Operation Desert Shield and Storm, and how much of that played out on CNN, on headline news, with Wolf Blitzer leading the way. What changed during, how did the Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm, how did that change media? How did media change the conversation then?
Well, I think it did change it, but probably in a different way than what we've seen recently. So one of the things about CNN, it got in early on cable, so it actually gets more money from the cable providers than do most of the outlets on TV, and it gets a privileged position. But the CNN market is such that it really makes its money when these live events occur. And as those things happened, you know, you went through the war in the Persian Gulf, and then you came to the O.J. Simpson trial. You know, by then they had kind of discovered what it was that was really good for their bottom line. Then they found out that Trump is also very good for the bottom line. And, you know, I did some studies of the news coverage of the 2016 election. And in the period before Iowa and New Hampshire, after Trump announced his candidacy, he received about twice as much news coverage as any of the other Republican contenders. And of course, many times what most of the Republican contenders received. And that continued into the primary period, the convention period, the general election. Even though he was running directly against a Democratic nominee at that point, he still was getting nearly 60% of the coverage. Now, how as a journalist do you justify covering Donald Trump to that extent? Well, it's pretty simple, actually. If you look at the ratings, if you put Donald Trump on the television screen, your ratings go up. And so Donald Trump has been good for business, at the least.
You did analysis as well as of the first 100 days and the coverage, positive versus negative. So talk a little bit about negativity and just really the tendency of the media to tell not only, to focus the lens in one place, but also to tell you a lot of the bad stories versus maybe some policy stories that are a more positive impact.
Yeah, and there's a long history to that piece. So I think we almost have to go back to the Watergate period to really understand negativity in the press. Before Watergate, there were negative stories, but most of the coverage of politics and political leaders, our political institutions, were positive in tone. They were talking about what was getting done, who was contributing, what the coalitions were like, and to some degree, what the substance of whatever issue might be on the table, what the deep substance of that was. I think Watergate fundamentally changed how journalists see their role. The lies of the Johnson and Nixon administration surrounding the Vietnam War taught journalists that they ought not to take politicians at their word. But what happened is that it's really difficult, basically, to get behind people's words. You don't know what their motives are. You don't know what the backstory is. You can do that through investigative reporting, as was done with Watergate. But investigative reporting takes a lot of time. You don't do that overnight, right? So how do you come up with something that works kind of every day in terms of really holding politicians to account? And the answer to that became attack journalism. So let's assume that you're in the Senate, Lori, and you say or do something, and then they turn to me as a senator on the other side of the fence to attack what you just did or said. And that kind of became a model of reporting. And the news turned very negative and it got increasingly negative. It's kind of plateaued. It can't get much more negative than it is. And what that had a real effect on the public, right? So, and it was gradual. There are lots of reasons why we don't have much trust in our leaders and institutions. And I certainly wouldn't say the main reason is negative news coverage. They've disappointed us in many ways over the recent decades. But it's also very difficult as a politician or an institution to have a positive kind of impression on the public if most of what's said about you is negative. And that, sadly, has been the state since roughly the 1980s. I think the press has to have a more positive role to play, a more constructive role. There's not much of a constructive role if you're calling out kind of everything that's wrong with politics without also telling us what's right.
But talk more about this idea of the attack, the sort of he said, she said journalism, where it's become easy to, if, you know, this senator has a comment, to just find somebody else on the other side versus really digging into what that comment, whether it's even even true.
Right.
It's lazy as well.
I think it is lazy journalism. Now, at the center that I'm at Harvard, we have each week we have a top journalist come in and to talk about what's happening, usually in their beat. So it won't simply be about journalism, but it might be about if a White House correspondent comes in about the White House, if someone from Congress, if they're over at State and the like. So they're talking about journalism in a context. But one of the most frequent comments they make about their colleagues, or many of their colleagues, is that they're lazy. And they don't mean that physically. They work long hours. They mean it mentally. So they kind of go for the easy story, the superficial part of it, who's up and who's down in the Washington power game. Or, and we already talked about it, the Trump tweet. I mean, that's easy journalism, to pop that up and talk about it. But you're not getting down more deeply into what's really at issue here. I mean, certainly politicians have a lot of stake in who's up or down, but the American public's stake in that conflict is what's at issue, what's in it, what does it mean for us? So in the study of election coverage that I did around 2016, there were seven times as many reports in the news about what a campaign development meant for the candidates as to what a campaign development meant for the voters. Campaign coverage really is much more designed around the candidates than it is to help voters kind of understand the choices they have. And you could pretty much say the same thing about daily journalism.
Now, those journalists are going to stand up and say, but that's not what people want to read. And there's some really interesting research in here about what people actually want, or at least what they say they want. Talk about the audience problem.
Well, I think we do have an audience problem. We say we would like better news, right? More positive news. But our brains are wired. Actually, we're more attentive to negative news. And some people make the argument that that really goes back in time. We're more alert to kind of danger signals in the environment than positive signals. So we pay more attention to that. We obviously use the entertainment not only to inform ourselves, to amuse ourselves. And what we've seen over the last 30, 40 years is we increasingly use the media and news as an entertainment medium, less than an informing medium. That's on us, right? And now how do you change that? You know, how do you change human nature? Well, on some level you don't. But on another level, a lot of these tastes are formed. I mean, we're not born kind of preferring certain kinds of news content to another, and it makes a difference kind of what you get. And to some degree, your taste or your appetite forms around what you eat in many ways. And, you know, if you look, for example, at what's happened in the mainstream press in terms of just how much of the news hall, and by the news hall we mean the total story content, how much of that deals with politics and government? Well, in the 1980s, it was about 75%. Today, it's about 50%. So what happened to that 25%, right? Where did that go? And where it went was stories about celebrity, stories about lifestyle, stories about this and that, right? And so the diet has changed. What we're being offered has changed, and our tastes have evolved in response to that. So, you know, I think, you know, you look at the British model, we see some of these same developments in Britain that we see in the U.S., so it's not like we're kind of just all by ourselves as an island. But it's much slower and much more robust, and you can ask, now, why is that the case? Well, for a long time, they've had a model of journalism there that's quite different from the American model. It's the BBC, which is still the main provider of news to the British people. And that's created a different taste about kind of what we ought to pay attention to, what's real news, what's not real news, right? Kind of what mix of things do we need to be paying attention to kind of do our duty as citizens.
Let's go back a little bit to how you spoke in the beginning of our conversation about knowledge and, mm-hmm. and teaching that in journalism school.
Yeah.
So many journalism students of a certain age will tell, you know, we were taught to be curious. You got into journalism because you got to ask all the stupid questions you didn't have to know anything.
Yeah.
And your job was to be a stand-in, you know, for the reader, for the listener, for the viewer, to sort of make sure everybody comes along. What kind of resistance was there in academia to sort of say, no, we need journalists to understand public policy at a very deep level, to understand economics, to understand science in a way that has never been expected before of all journalism students?
So I would rank curiosity pretty high on my list of what makes for a good journalist. I mean, I do think you want a journalist who really thinks in terms of questions. You know, what do we need to know in this situation? But then you think about kind of what goes into those questions. Where do those questions come from? And there's kind of a first level obvious question. But when you start to get into these more complicated policy areas like the environment or poverty and the like, and what you know in many ways determines the kinds of questions that you can ask. And so if you don't know a subject very well, that limits you. It also limits you in another way with policymakers particularly. If as a journalist they're spinning you, basically they're handing you a line, it's kind of nice if you're a journalist to know that that you're being spun. And how do you know if you're being spun? Well, you can't make the assumption that everybody you talk to is trying to spin you. But if what you're hearing doesn't accord with your understanding of an issue or a problem, then you're in a position to push back and to say, but what about, right? And you know, if you listen to some of the really good interviewers on NPR, they know a lot about the subject that they're doing the interview on. And they do push back, and they say, but, right? It's not like, yes, right? Just taking it in. Then you get some real conversations, right? Then you begin to kind of work toward a place. And for the listening audience, that's where you really begin to understand. You're still going to get the partisan viewpoint, right? Politicians are partisans, and they're going to give you one argument, and you had a politician from the other party up there, you're going to get another argument. But a really good interview can kind of bring in where those things begin to join, and you can see the strong and weak points on each side.
And politicians know this. They know how to play the game. I can think of several interviews on this show where, you know, they will drop so many facts, and you're just processing that on this subject,
right.
And then all of a sudden they're on an entirely different subject, dropping all. And then, you know, in 3 minutes they have laid out so many inaccuracies in front of you that... Yeah. As a reporter on a live interview, you're like, well, which one should I start with? So how do you prepare for those kind of, you know, where you don't want to be the adversarial press, except sometimes it is an adversarial situation?
Well, I mean, scholars can do that too, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
We're not bad at changing the subject when we get into an uncomfortable spot. But, you know, again, I think if you're informed, you're more likely to be able to pull that conversation back. Now, you can never get a policymaker, a newsmaker, to say what they don't want to say, right? If you're really good, you can get them to open up about things they would like to talk about and don't mind talking about. So, you know, there's always going to be those points where they begin to kind of shut you down. You can make it more uncomfortable for them, right? And sometimes if you make people uncomfortable, they actually will come back and tell you something, right? It's an old negotiating trick. If if you've ever taken a class on negotiation, sometimes they teach you under some circumstances make them uncomfortable, because when we're uncomfortable, we kind of like to, we're social animals on some level, right? Then we like to, I've got to be nice. I got to rejoin this. So, but again, knowing the subject is critical. You do your homework. This would be a terrible program if you didn't do your homework, right?
There's a lot of homework, yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of homework, right? You know, being a talk show host is really tough. No, yeah. It is, yeah.
Let's talk about those young journalists who want to go in the field, are all in for a program that really focuses on a knowledge-based, experience, yeah, and education. And then you come out into the world of journalism and you're going to get paid. The education, we're not going to get paid what physicians get paid or what attorneys get paid coming out of college. If you want to raise the level of education and training, yeah, don't you have to also raise the status of the profession financially so it's economically viable for journalists to get the kind of education that they need to do this job well?
Oh, I think that's right. But, to some degree, in some programs, you actually attract more talented people than you would think, given what the salary structure once they get out looks like. And that's been true since Watergate for journalism. And I think it speaks to the commitment that many young people have who go into journalism to making some kind of public contribution, so that the reward of going into that profession is not simply a financial one. Now, the problem is, at some point, you got to pay the bills. And, journalism is one of the lowest paid professions and has been for a long time. And it's a little bit like the entertainment industry. It's kind of deceptive. So you hear that, some anchor makes $15 million a year and some broadcast correspondent gets $300,000 a year. That's true. But what's the entry level salary for a journalism graduate? And it's shockingly low. It's about $30,000. And then you think about trying to pay back on an education and the like. So I do think what happens, I think, with any of these professions, the more professional it becomes, the more claim you have to moving up the salary level, right? And we saw that in business. Business schools did the transformation I'm talking about with journalism schools about the 1950s, when they began to add economics to the curriculum, when they began to add basically kind of deep kind of management studies to the curriculum, right? And increasingly now they're using social psychology and other things in business schools. That's a real skill set. And the better your skill set, the more you can demand in the workplace. And one problem with journalism is that, it's expensive to get the education, but a lot of our journalists never went through a journalism program. You can just walk in the door some places and become a journalist. And that depresses. So the more training you have, the more valuable you are to a news organization. And I would argue that that's a function of the nature of the education you're getting. Then you're less replaceable. Someone who just comes in off the street with a college degree is not going to be able to perform at the level you can perform.
Where do we go from here? How do we make it better? You talk in this, and I highly recommend this book, if nothing else, to just have the references, in the back with some of the resources for journalists and consumers of news as well. Changing the education structure, what else really needs to be changed that can be addressed? What are some of the ways forward?
Well, I think you get large differences of opinion about this. My book is mainly about the supply side, what journalists need to do in terms of giving us better news. You spoke earlier about the demand side, what is it that we like, right? And you've got to create demand for good news. And here I think is where you really get strong differences of opinion. Some people think that we really need to do more in our schools, that media literacy needs to be a large part of the curriculum. Some think that we need to kind of reinvigorate civics education. When I was in high school, you took a civics course. In fact, the average across the country was in schools was 3 to 4 courses that related to government, public affairs, and the citizen's obligation to society. The average now across the country is less than a full course during high school. If we don't kind of understand our obligations as citizens, including becoming an informed citizen, then we're going to underperform. So it's not simply that journalism may be underperforming, but we're going to underperform. And when you have either side of that equation underperforming, it's really hard to kind of get out of that box. And so I think we need some fundamental changes in education to really get young people who are the ones that have been walking away from news, the shrinkage that's happened in news organizations. We've lost a third of our journalists over the last 2 decades because of increased competition for public attention. And most of that attrition has been from adults 35 and under. And if they don't start paying attention to news, if they don't think and see that as part of, here's, I'm a citizen. I kind of need to know what's going on in my community, in the nation, in the world. If that's not part of the mindset, then they'll go from day to day to day and be quite content playing electronic games. I play an electronic game, so I'm not criticizing that particular use, but kind of a healthier diet on the public side would be useful.